So welcome everybody to All About Symbian Insight 71. I'm Steve Litchfield and today I have just with me Mr. Rafe Blandford.
Hello everybody.
Yeah, Ewan's away in Moscow at Eurovision still. I gather he's having a storming time. We've heard lots of reports back, but he will be back with us next week. In the meantime, we've got loads of news, loads of reader questions, I hesitate to call them, but things have been fired at us by email and via Twitter. And Rafe and I are going to have a pretty good go at trying to answer them. First of all, there's some news. Comes With Music is back in the UK. It's been relaunched. This is perhaps Comes With Music 2.0. And it's with the 5800. Rafe, what's the scoop?
So what we've got here is that Orange and Nokia have signed an agreement to bring Comes With Music on the Nokia 5800 Express Music. Those of you who have used Comes With Music in the UK before will remember that it was on the Nokia 5310 as a pay-as-you-go thing. It did also make it onto a couple of N-series handsets, the N95 and the N96, both SIM-free through the Carphone Warehouse and for a short time available through the Operator 3, although neither of those were really pushed in comparison to the 5310. So what we've got here is Comes With Music on the Nokia 5800, but it's exclusive to Orange, and you'll have to sign up to an Orange contract for 2 years. There's various contract rates, but it starts at about £25 a month, and you get, I think it's 200 minutes, 300 text messages, and you get unlimited music for those 2 years. I actually think both the handset and the offering here are a little bit more compelling than what was around before. Looking at the sums, you can see they're putting in about £5 a month for the music offering, which isn't bad. So, you know, if you're into music and you're getting a music-dedicated handset, I think this is a pretty good deal. And assuming Orange and Nokia put a bit of marketing behind it, I would suspect that this will do better than it did the first time round. You know, the UK is actually a market apart in some senses for Comes With Music. It's launched in Singapore and Australia relatively successfully. It's a bit early to tell with some of the other markets like Brazil, for example, and Mexico, where it launched recently. But Nokia, for example, in Singapore, projecting that it could add 30% to the digital music market. I think they've had something like 16,000 sales and more than a million downloads. And that was a while back, you know, just a few weeks after it launched, I think. So I think Comes With Music, it's one of those things that is a very compelling offering, but you have to get it absolutely right when you're delivering into the market or it won't fly. And that was a problem the first time around in the UK, and we'll have to wait and see. But I think it's a concept that will work in time, but it's just finding exactly the right formula.
Okay, this may be an FAQ within our own All About Symbian team, but maybe I should know the answer to this, but let's say someone signs up with Orange for Comes With Music 5800. In 14, 15 months' time, still with 8 or 9 months to go on their two-year contract, Orange offers them an upgrade to an N102 or whatever it is then, and they go for the upgrade. What happens to all these DRM-locked music tracks? Do they get taken with you onto the new handset? What happens then?
I think that's probably largely going to depend on whether it's another country music handset. If it is another one, there should be no problem on the transfer. If it's not, there's one of two things will happen, and I'm not sure which one it will be. I suspect if you remain an Orange customer, they'll go out of their way to support you, in which case it will work, because basically once your subscription is up, I think you can do one mobile device transfer every 6 months, up to about 4 device transfers. But the thing is, none of that has actually happened yet, so I think we'll have to wait and see to see how practical it is, because in theory it's a bit like N-Gage games, which you should be able to transfer, but it's, you know, reality sometimes differs from the theory there. If you're going to something completely different, you're a non-Nokia handset, you're probably going to be out in the cold in terms of having your tracks transferred across. So, I mean, although Comes With Music does allow you to keep the music after your subscription period is over, to my mind, that really applies most on the PC, and it's yet to be proved how well that will work in terms of transferring to a mobile device. I think what Nokia and Orange would hope is that Comes With Music will be a bit more established in 18 months' time, and so it'll be easy to transfer. But yes, I wouldn't hold my breath on that one necessarily.
I presume that even the a legitimate transfer of DRM Comes With Music to a new handset would involve a re-download of everything, because obviously the files themselves have to rewritten with a new DRM header. Or is there a utility that sort of somehow magically touches all your files and changes them for a new handset?
Again, I don't know the absolute correct answer to that, but in theory it should be a fairly simple matter of just relicensing the files, so you shouldn't in fact have to download them, because the licenses are stored separately to the actual music files. So what it should be able to do is say, am I authorized to play this music track? And the server will go, yes, you are, and here's the license. And obviously that's, you know, a few kilobytes compared to megabytes of re-downloading. So no, you shouldn't have to re-download.
Okay, okay. More news. The N97's landing page on Nokia's website is now up, complete with an interactive demo that even lets you load up your real Facebook contacts to show how the Facebook widget and Facebook application will work on the real N97. This was pretty cool. What did you think, Rafe?
I thought it was an ingenious use of Facebook Connect to sort of demonstrate how this thing is going to work. And I do think one of the key selling points of the N97 is going to be this customizable home screen with a particular emphasis on sort of the social networking or the social communication widgets like Facebook, MySpace, and no doubt we'll see some others as well. So I think this is a great way to sell the handset. And actually, you know, compared to some of the demos you sometimes get on these Nokia product pages, I think it actually shows off the capabilities of the N97 really well. I think that sort of thing is to, you know, Nokia to be congratulated on doing, you know, they've improved a lot over the last few years. Their product pages have become a lot more, it's not just interactive, they've had the right sort of information on there. And people often, you know, praise the Apple adverts or the Apple websites for having long videos that you can watch and see what the phone's about. And in the case of the adverts, just showing what it's about. But I think it's one step even better if you can have an interactive demo. And I guess in the ideal world, you'd have the whole thing you could get through. But as I say, with this particular demo, I think you get a very good flavour for what the phone can do, especially some of the newer features like the home screen.
Yeah, it was very interesting in the comments to one of our news stories on the N97, people saying, well, if this is going to be Nokia's flagship, what's it best at? And they're saying it's not the best camera, it's not the best music player, it's not the best QWERTY device, etc., etc. And the answer I came up with, and with a couple of others, was it could be the best social networking device with the nice keyboard, nice big screen, with the widget home screen, the Facebook application, and a pretty good camera. You've got everything you need, really, for a complete social networking environment to do with text, video and pictures. I'm quite impressed and I'm looking forward to it in this context.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You know, you can throw in the GPS as well. I mean, I think it's sometimes a mistake to sort of label any one feature as the best thing. I mean, that does tend to be what happens for marketing purposes. You know, the N95 basically sold because it had a 5-megapixel camera as much as anything else. But with the N97, I think it's kind of the added software. It's the idea that it is more than just a mobile phone. And, you know, obviously the comparison is going to be made to devices like the iPhone and possibly also the HTC Magic, the new Android device, as well as some of the HTC devices. But I do think this is going to become sort of increasingly important, but it's still going to be important how you can set it out of the box and what the N97 home screen and things like the Facebook functionality is they put very familiar brands and experiences right on the front of the device where people can see them initially, and maybe later on they get into some of the depth of the device. You know, is it a technical flagship in the same way that the N95 was? No, I don't think it is, but the N95, I don't think it sold because it was a technical flagship. It sold because people saw what it could do and they wanted that. You know, I think it's also, you know, in a sort of more waffly sense, if you like, the N97 is kind of the phone where Nokia is sort of bringing out its vision of mobile internet convergence, the idea of a mobile computer that brings mobile and the internet together. And you're tying in, you know, the social location, Web 2.0, all those buzzwords, which, you know, quite frankly, get a bit irritating after a while. But there is an element of truth to that. You know, the N97 isn't really about making a phone call or text messages. It's about the services that go with it, be that the Nokia Maps, you know, the social networking, or some of the other Ovi services. And that's the thing that's going to be appealing. I think it's going to be quite hard to communicate that across. And we'll have to see how well the N97 does in that respect.
Yeah, a nice slinky link there from the social networking into our next news story, and also a question for a reader who asks about Share and Ovi, which the news is that Nokia have stated that they're not going to carry on developing the site. They bought the service from Twango originally and kept it more or less the same initially. And then they started overhauling it and making a few enemies in the process, and I think probably losing some popularity in the process. And they've now decided in the current economic climate that they're not going to carry on developing it at all. And the reader here asks, what are the reasons for its failure, Rafe?
I think that's a tricky question to answer. I think first up, I would say was facing significant competition from the likes of Flickr. That's, 3 billion photos uploaded to that. So changing people's habit to use that is difficult. And, originally, I think Sharonovit was envisaged as being a more socialized version of some of the photo sharing sites. And what I mean by that, it was things like the channels and sharing with groups of friends and people, rather than being a media hosting site, which, I think is how Flickr really started off. It's always had a strong social element, but that was in the sense of the social community built around the web community rather than your existing social network, which I think is what Sharon Ovi was trying to do.
Yeah, that's what Twango had lined up originally, which is why what attracted Nokia to it, I think.
Absolutely. And also, it was more than just media. It was also all kinds of files. You could, in theory, share PDF and doc files. And, I think some of that has gone away as sites like Flickr have added in more social elements, and probably more crucially, actually, sites like Facebook have really taken over that role of sharing photos amongst group of friends. There's hundreds of millions of photos on Facebook. I think it's now one of the biggest photo sharing sites on the web, and so that really stole some of the wind from the sails of eShare, and there's not really much you can do about that. I also think it's probably, there's an element of it being outside Nokia's area of expertise. It's not really a software engineering company, and I don't really see it as a core service that ties in one sense with what Nokia is doing. Yes, clearly it's a very popular thing to do, but does it have that core connection which would enable Nokia to leverage its expertise? Maybe not. I think those are the sort of quick answers to that. And you could probably look at some of the technical reasons in terms of, did it have enough investment? Did it have enough time to mature? And that's, very much a subjective thing. But I think the main reason is probably the rise of media sharing within existing social networks.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So there are multifarious reasons, I think, is the answer there. But in the current economic climate, you can't just afford to ignore all of those reasons and carry on.
And ultimately, yes, it is a cost-cutting exercise for Nokia, and I've no doubt that the economic climate has sort of promoted that and made it happen more quickly than it might have otherwise done. Nokia has said, as a result of this announcement, that they're going to work more closely with third parties, and they've already got pretty good Flickr integration. And it would be great to see, things like Facebook, maybe YouTube, Picasa or others come in. And we're probably going to see that on the N97 with Facebook. But actually, I think from a, building an ecosystem point of view, it makes much more sense to work with the existing well-known brands rather than trying to do everything from scratch. In some areas like mail, it does make sense. I think Ovimail makes sense, but with Nokia Messaging, it's very notable that they're working with the likes of Gmail, Hotmail, Yahoo Mail for people who already have these things.
I was going to ask about Ovi Mail and Files and Ovi. Do you see both those services carrying on?
Files and Ovi is a tricky one because I think it's not really such a mainstream service as some, but there is definitely something to be said for that, especially in the enterprise space and to an extent in the personal space as well. But I can't help but think it needs to maybe be streamlined a bit and made a little bit easier. If that sort of thing gets integrated into file dialogues, it's not impossible to see that sort of thing being used quite extensively, or indeed, put an entry so you can share your photos from Share Online up to Files on Ovi. That's the one I'd sort of be more sceptical about. Absolutely, I think Mail on Ovi will survive. As I say, it's got this dual nature. It's the Nokia messaging on the one side for interfacing with existing email addresses, but there's definitely going to always be a demand for those who don't have an email address. And it's, it's better if you do it through Nokia because they can obviously control the whole experience and make it more streamlined. And certainly when I spoke to the Nokia messaging team recently, they said without sort of any promotion, just making it available very quietly via Beta Labs, they've had 250,000 signups to Ovi Mail, of which about 80% have been from an actual device, and obviously that's a Series 40 device because that's the only devices where you can do that at the moment. And I think that probably is one of the fastest growing Nokia services from a standing start, especially considering it's not really been formally rolled out. So yes, I see that one as a lot more sustainable in the longer term.
Yeah, I have to say, from my own viewpoint, I've had all sorts of nightmares with Nokia messaging, but that's perhaps a rant or a tutorial for another day. Let's move on. Another reader question. Here we are. With devices such as the 5800 already biting into N-series territory, perhaps the N-series time has passed already. Is it time for Nokia to drop or replace the N-series concept? And I'll have first stab at that.
Oh, good.
I rather like the branding. I like the concept of having devices where you know from the model number roughly where they're aimed at. I like the fact that they can launch N-series devices, and you know you're getting one of the best cameras with a decent aperture, for example, decent sensor. It's going to take good photos. You can buy an E-series device. You know it'll have fabulous build quality, great keyboard. The numbered devices are a bit of an oddity, but they tend to vary in price and capability. But I like the branding. Maybe the numbered devices could have an extra letter. I don't know, Z devices or the Ps. What do you think?
I agree with you. It does make sense to have a separate brand for the high-end devices. I think it's perhaps been devalued a little bit recently because there's been a lot more competition. You know, when the N73 and the N95 were around, there wasn't really much to stand up to them in the consumer market. And now we've had, you know, Apple come in, the HTC devices, you know, Android coming in, and, you know, also other manufacturers doing their own kind of consumer-focused smartphones. So I think that's, you know, in some sense taking some of the luster away from it because it's not as unique as it once was, but it's still a very important brand for Nokia. And going forward, I think it's probably fair to say we're going to see something of a renaissance for N-series later in the year. Now, just to put the cat amongst the pigeons, I don't necessarily think that will be on Symbian devices. There's various rumours floating around the internet, and certainly Nokia is still developing MoMo actively. It's one of the few areas of the organisation where they're still recruiting developers. But I think we'll continue to see N-series handsets in the sort of Symbian or S60 space, especially as we move forward with some of the future versions of the Symbian platform that have support for multi-core processors, which will bring back some of the sort of the technical glamour, if you like, to the N-series. But, you know, for all we talk about technical glamour, the software is increasingly important. And it is fair to say that N-series doesn't have quite the cutting edge it used to, partly because much of its software has been passed, you know, further down the software chain. You know, something like the Nokia 5800 has the podcasting client, you know, Video Center and things like that. So I can see the point that the reader's making here. You know, N-series isn't quite as exclusive it used to be, but I think that's also a reflection of the fact that people expect their phones to do more. And so N-series always stood for, you know, being about more than just voice and texting, but now all phones are expected to do that, so inevitably it's perhaps not quite as shiny as it once was. Is that a fair comment?
Yes, and presumably there's not much overhead in actually maintaining the different brands. We're only talking about a model number here. It's that in the old days you actually used to have specific Nokia N-series and E-series teams, completely different teams of people. Now, as I understand it, all these teams have been merged, and it's simply a marketing and branding exercise at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I mean, it always used to be that you had the enterprise device division and the sort of consumer device division, and they were, you know, very separate, and you'd actually see quite similar devices being developed, you know, without much crossover. Now Nokia's reorganized itself and there's just one sort of devices group within the company. So yes, it is a marketing designation. That's not to say it's not expensive to run this extra brand, but yes, comparatively speaking, it's you know, it's an overhead that's been set up already, so there's a lot of sunk cost in that N-series brand. And, you know, although geeks may complain about it, the truth is it's still recognized as kind of the high-end sort of smartphone brand of Nokia in the wider context.
Yeah. Okay, next question. There are 20,000 items rumored for the Ovi store coming up, which a nice headline figure to blow the Apple fanboys away. But here's the big question. How many of these, what percentage of these will actually be applications, and what will be ringtones, wallpaper, other miscellaneous items?
Yes, I saw this particular news story and it made me smile because I thought, someone's being trigger happy with the statistics. The truth is that the Ovi store supports a great deal, greater number of devices than your typical application store, talking about as many as 50 devices, I think, and in the longer term, even more than that. In terms of applications, I think there will probably be between 1,000 and 2,000, and I would suspect towards more 1,000 applications available at launch. So just 5% of the content will be applications. The rest of it will sort of be made up of, you know, short video clips, movie trailers, ringtones, wallpapers, themes, and other sort of little bits of content like that. It's still actually a pretty impressive achievement, I think. You know, if you compare it to some of the other application store launches, it certainly does dwarf the initial numbers. I think more important going forward in numbers terms is how developers do from the Ovi store, you know, whether they're able to make money from it and how much content gets added on an ongoing basis. So let's look at this in 6 months' time and ask how much content has been added in the last 30 days, for example. So yeah, this is a lies, damn lies and statistics one, I think.
I have to say, I'm surprised you even guessed, you guessed over 1,000. I would actually have guessed something along the lines of 200 or 300. Initially, with that number obviously growing and growing, but
well, I have cheated here slightly, as okay. I spoke to Eric John, who's one of the former Nokia. Well, he's the, I think, one of the managers behind the Ovi store, and he said at the Nokia Developer Summit in his presentation that there would be about 1,000 applications at launch.
Okay, okay. And does that include a multiple version of applications for different different handsets, or is that 1,000 unique applications?
I think that's, we can probably assume that's 1,000 unique applications, and I would imagine some of those would be you know, Java games for Series 40 phones. So if you're looking at sort of you know, something like the Nokia 5800, your guess of 100 to 200 may be more accurate. But I guess we'll have to wait and see, really.
Yeah, a lot of people have been looking forward to the Ovi store and looking forward to, you know, some lots of brand new applications. I think it's just fair to defuse that slightly and say that an awful lot of the S60 applications in the Ovi store will actually be applications we know and love and the classics from the current system. Obviously, in the developers who have been developing over the last few months, they've been aiming very much to launch with the Ovi store. So there will be some new stuff to look forward to, but there will also be all the old classics from people like Symbianware and Epochware.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. You know, they aren't all going to be new applications. And actually, as I said, the test is in the months ahead rather than at the launch time. That said, there will be some new applications because some companies haven't bothered going through the existing, you know, marketing channels or retail channels and just want to make a big splash with the Ovi store. And I think that particularly applies to some of the bigger brands as well, where they're doing kind of movie tie-in content or things like that. So there will be some new stuff there, but I think people should, yeah, you're quite right, rein in their expectations.
Yeah, I've noticed there have been several applications. I've been waiting for the new generation, the next version of it, and in each case the developer said, oh, no, it's all on hold now until the Ovi store launches. So it's been a frustrating month or so, but hopefully we've now only got a matter of a week or two to go.
And I think the other thing is, of course, that we may know about some of these fantastic applications, but the vast majority of people don't, and so they'll be new to them to all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
So this is another time when being a geek is a bad news, because you don't get to unwrap the presents underneath the Ovi store Christmas tree.
Okay, next reader question. One guy asks, what upcoming S60 5th edition phones are there? We know about the N97. We've already had the 5800. We know about the Omnia HD, but there's been precious little else actually announced. But what can you think of that runs S60 5th edition that's coming up, Ray?
Well, there's only one phone we can really talk about, and that's the Sony Ericsson iDo, which presumably will get a slightly different name by the time it comes out, and that's due out maybe the end of this year. Perhaps being more realistic, it will be early next year before it's on the shelves properly. Other than that, there's no S60 5th edition devices that have been announced. However, I think it's probably fair to say there's quite a few on the way. I mean, do you know about any devices that have been formally announced that I've missed, Steve?
No, but you did make one point in one of the recent podcasts, which is that some of the devices going forward into 2009 will still be branded as running S60 3rd edition, even though they'll have extra technology in them, including things like the Ovi store and the new services. So I don't think we should put everything behind the one label of S60 5th edition. Certainly this reader shouldn't be disappointed that there haven't been a huge swathe of them announced.
Yes, no, I'd agree with that. I mean, obviously, there's quite a few S60 3rd edition devices that have been announced, like the N86 or the 5390 or some of the other Express Music devices that are coming. And yes, there'll be more of those. In terms of S65th edition, I don't think it's going to be letting any secrets out of the bag to say that we're expecting more devices from Nokia later in this year. And they've sort of talked about maybe a couple more coming later in the year in their usual, we're a device company, we're always releasing new devices. I think obviously the other company to look to devices from is Samsung. And I would very much expect them to complement the high-end S65th edition device that they have, just as Nokia sort of have the 5800 in the mid-tier and the N97 at the high-end. So, you know, you can't tell until these things are actually announced. And there is surprisingly precious little in the way of rumours. You know, there's, I think, a rumour about a cut-down 5800, for example, but very little concrete has emerged about that. But all of those sort of things are, you know, are pretty safe bets, and it's not out of this world to imagine that something like the E75, that sort of QWERTY keyboard, you know, slide out that's maybe, you know, cheaper than the N97 but still relatively high end, will come out as an S65th edition device. But it's not that S65th edition has been abandoned or anything, far from it. There's an awful lot to come in the next 12 months, but it is still a relatively young platform. And there will be some manufacturers, certainly outside Nokia, who may be going, we're actually going to wait for the first release of the Symbian Foundation, which is going to happen round about now, actually, but won't be hardened until the latter half of the year, sort of talking November time. And when I say hardened, that means you'll start expect to seeing it in devices available on the shelves. So you can probably expect quite a few devices to be announced in the second half of the year.
Yeah, I should also mention that the 5800 being a sort of a low to mid-tier smartphone, and the N97 being, in theory, a top-end smartphone, those two devices cover an awful lot of different form factors and needs between them, and there really isn't that much need for something else. And also the fact that because both devices effectively have a full screen face, just as with the original iPhone marketing, you can adapt their displays and interfaces to suit almost any need, because you're not constrained by the fact that you've got physical buttons which have to be in a particular position for a particular need. So having full-face touchscreen devices does have the advantage that they can suit a wider range of needs in a wider market segment without having to produce physically new hardware.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, the other thing to remember is, you know, there is a fairly obvious current obsession for touch technology. But the truth is, even if you add up all the touch devices, that's still only around, I think, 10% of the market, maybe even less than that. And so the majority of the market, even in terms of smartphones, is still taking place in non-touch devices. And that's even more true, obviously, in the wider mobile phone market. And so while people are sort of, I wouldn't say obsessed with touch, you know, you have to remember that actually the bigger part of the market is still non-touch. And obviously at the moment, that's S60. Third edition, as we mentioned in the previous podcast, there will come a time when that effectively is upgraded, but that will actually be under the auspices of one of the first Symbian Foundation releases rather than an S60 release.
Every single S60 third edition device that's currently on the market, I believe, is QWERTY VGA. Have I missed something there before I carry on?
No, that's right. I mean, the exceptions are the sort of discontinued devices, which are the E90 and the N80.
And E70, yeah.
That's right.
So another reader question for us. QWERTY VGA screens in 2009 seems like a travesty in the light of 100 competitors with much bigger screens. Can Nokia carry on with QWERTY VGA much longer?
Ooh, would you want to go first on that one, Steve? Because I'm curious to hear what you think.
I don't think they can. Although I've been enthusiastic about things like the N82, great camera, etc., etc. The N95 is still a great device. The N85 with a lovely screen. They're all nice devices and they all do the job, but they do start to pale as you look forward into devices such as the upcoming iPhone release. There's the Omnia HD, I think, which will set a new standard, certainly for display. For Symbian OS powered devices, the Omni HD display is stunning. And if you put even the brightest QWERTY VGA S60 device from Nokia next to it, say the N96 or N95 8GB next to the Omni HD, it's patently obvious which one you want to watch a little video clip on, which one you want to view your photos on, which one you want to even check your diary on. So I think Nokia are going to have to start looking at this. If they're carrying on with S63rd edition, then they need to look at supporting larger screens and different screen resolutions. That's partly why I love the 5800 so much, in the term it's got so much larger screen. You can watch BBC iPlayer on it, and it can be your TV effectively, and you wouldn't want to watch TV on an N82, much as I love it. What do you think?
From a personal point of view, I would love to see higher resolution screens. But I also accept I'm relatively unusual in that sort of, I'm probably a, you know, early adopter, power user, elite user, whatever you want to call them. And I think it's interesting hearing you talk through that. And all the high resolution devices that you talked about are touch devices. And high resolution doesn't necessarily make sense on a non-touch device. You know, these, in terms of the physical size of these screens, they tend to be, you know, even the biggest ones, I think 2.6 inches, and typically they're, you know, 2 inches, 2.4 inches. And so packing extra pixels in there doesn't necessarily pack extra information, because you have to actually increase the zoom size, because it's just hard to see physically because of the size of the screen, not the resolution.
Oh, it never harmed me on my E90.
but the E90 had a physically bigger screen inside, and so that was fine. But on the outside, it was QVGA.
Now, I'm talking about bigger screens as well. I'm talking about Nokia increasing the physical size of the screen as well as the resolution. So, for example, you could have web browsing on the E75. It's a lovely little device with a few foibles, but the screen is so small. Trying to go back to browsing the web on a 2.4 inch screen as a serious business user is just a pain.
I agree with you there, but you run up against sort of size limits. You know, how do you make the screen bigger without making the device too big, one including the necessary non-touch controls in terms of the keypad and the D-pad and things like that. The other sort of things I want to touch upon in this sort of QVGA argument, which I find myself having an increasing amount, is that QVGA is good enough for most users, and basically when you increase the screen resolution, you increase the sort of battery usage, and you increase the cost as well. And so there comes a point at which it's not worth doing, because the majority of your users don't actually see any benefit from it. Now, I accept there's always going to be people who want high resolution and bigger screens. But while the majority of people don't, or rather aren't willing to pay for it, is there any point in adding it? And I think that's why QVGA has survived for so long on these devices. The other thing to consider is from a purely platform point of view, and that is that S63rd edition doesn't really have very good support for higher resolution screen as things stand. Although there is support for the scalable UI and things like that, it hasn't actually been engineered with the sort of next size up in mind yet, whereas obviously it has been in S65th edition. But the good news is, as far as people are concerned who like high resolution screens, is that the next release of Symbian, in other words, Symbian 2, the one, as I was saying, was talking about, that's coming out now and will be in devices end of the year, early next year, supports VGA resolution. And so I suspect we will start to see VGA resolution devices, even on non-touchscreen devices at that time. And at the moment, the sort of engineering cost, if you like, of actually adapting S63rd edition feature pack 2 to a high resolution device is prohibitive, and so they get doing it in the next version of the software, and that's when it will become enabled. So in technical terms, that's the reason we don't have high resolution devices at the moment, and it will be fixed. And clearly, when you're seeing some of the other non-touch screen devices from other manufacturers having high resolution screens, there is their demand for that, and I think it will come in time, and I for one will be very glad to see it.
Yeah, I have to say, when the N86 8 megapixels was launched, I really genuinely hoped that would come with a VGA screen, obviously pixel doubled or anti-aliased, so that you can see font things at a normal font size, but I really hoped that would be VGA. It turned out not to be, but I can envisage a product like that, perhaps the N87 with a, you know, whatever it is then, a 12 megapixel camera and Xenon. I'll probably get that in. And a VGA screen, I think that would work very well, even as a non-touch device. I'm also wondering why they can't produce a Nokia E91 to replace my other long forgotten, rather obsolete favourite. But again, that's a subject for another podcast. Thank you for all your questions, if you've been writing in. Follow us on allaboutsymbian.com, also on Twitter at Rafe Blandford, Ewan Spence, or Steve Litchfield, all without spaces. And you can fire extra questions there, and we'll try and get to them in the next podcast, when we'll also have Ewan Spence back. and we'll try and get you to some more interesting topics. So from now, it's goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
And goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
Till next time.